Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Putting It Together, where my guest today is Brian Ferguson. I'm Brian O'Sullivan, by the way, and this is my podcast, Putting It Together, Creative Conversations. And my guest today is Brian Ferguson, terrific actor and a really down-to-earth, classy dude. Not that I would expect anything less, of course. Great to talk to Brian, and it's been a while in the making. Or at least it's been a while in the organising. Long-standing member of our scene, telly, film, radio as well, and of course theatre, a great actor, and just a long-standing name on the list. Finally get to sit down with Brian and have a chat, and it's great, some of the corners we get into, talking a lot about health and just how this business can affect your health and how your health can affect your work and all that stuff. So that's really interesting. And what it got us into was a conversation about turning down work and what does that entail and what does it mean and what ripples does it create. Really interesting stuff, and stuff that I think we're uneasy about talking about, because our game, I suppose, we believe, is to get as much work as possible. And of course it is, we're trying to make a career out of doing what we love to do. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, I think that's a fairly broad generalization of what it is we're at on a basic level. So what happens when work doesn't suit us, when it's not right for us, or when it has the potential to make us sick? Can we turn it down? And, you know, what happens when we do? And it's really interesting to hear Brian's perspective on that. It turns out it's possible. You can actually do that. And he talks about what happens when you don't do that. And it can have, you know, dire consequences if you just keep pushing. He also talks about acting and then not acting as an antidote, doing something else. And that's another topic that we don't get into very often in our business, the idea of wanting to not act for a while because it takes a lot, or you have to give a lot to do it. So it's really great to hear about that. I'm always keen to hear, how do I put it, other perspectives on this job. Because, you know, it's easy for us to sit. We could sit for an hour and say, oh, that was wonderful. And, oh, yes, I worked with him. Oh, he was a darling. I mean, we do that in green rooms across the land. We're all used to that. But to actually get down to some of these interesting brass tacks that we don't really hit on very often, about the nature of the business, how it affects our health, about doing jobs, about what happens if we do them and what happens if we don't, that type of stuff. You know, and it's not an embarrassment of riches by any means, and it's a privilege to be offered something, and it's, I suppose, perhaps a bigger privilege to turn it down if it's not right. And we're not all so fortunate, perhaps, but it's just some food for thought, some stuff to chew on. It's very inspiring, and that's the thing about these conversations. I get to bring them to you, and I think, you know, and I just know that they'll be useful to somebody because they interest me so much. But I get to benefit from them as well, firsthand, because I'm an actor and I'm trying to figure out what it's all about and make a living at it. And so I get the direct line to these conversations. How cool. Lucky me. Yeah, it's a great privilege to be able to have them and to be able to be firsthand witness to what these people say. And certainly, you know, plentiful in Brian's case, plenty of great stuff came out of this conversation. I feel like I'm babbling a bit. I'm in the caravan, as if that's an excuse. I'm not at home. I'm just kind of looking out at the campsite and kind of I've got half an eye on people lighting their barbecues and stuff. But anyway, I'm just sort of on a working holiday and letting my mind run a wee bit when I'm talking to you. And when I'm not talking to you, I'm working on songs for my show, and I'm reading a book by Anthony Sher called Primo Time, which is about his a one-man play that he adapted and performed. And that's very apt for what I'm doing just now, because I'm writing a one-woman play. It's going to be performed by Danny Heron and directed by Leslie Hart. And we're at a critical point with the script. We go into rehearsal in just under 3 weeks. So it's on my mind. It's constantly on my mind, in a way that I've never really experienced before. When I go for a walk, whatever I do, I'm thinking about this script and I'm trying to figure out, I suppose, or I'm letting my brain slowly figure out what it is and what it needs to be. So yeah, it's all-consuming in a sense. And yet, you know, I've been able to relax while I've been here. I just sat outside, met some people who just pulled up at the campsite, and we've chatted for a couple of hours and met their dog and just sat there and had a cup of tea and just, you know, looked away from my phone and thought about nothing but the conversation I was having with them, which was pretty magic. We could all probably afford to do that more, you know. So it's been great. It's been great having a wee bit of a break, although it's been a working holiday. It's been a break from the kind of running about that happens no matter what when I'm at home. Even if I'm supposedly off work, I end up just running about all the time, meeting this person and that person. And I've got to get over here and then get parked and run and go and see this show. And here at the caravan, life is paced slightly differently. So before I bring you my guest of the week, I just want to remind you that we are a self-supporting entity, this podcast, and you can help us do that by going to puttingittogethercast.com and clicking on donate. You can donate a small or a large amount. You can do it one-off or make it a regular thing. And we really do appreciate any help that you can give, because we're unfunded at the moment and we do have running costs, and there are some people who are kind enough to give a wee bit that they have extra to help us do that. So if you'd like to become one of those people, please do consider going to puttingittogethercast.com and clicking on donate. I also want to remind you that this week's play at Oran Mór, at A Play, A Pie and A Pint at Oran Mór, I should say, is Celestial Body by Morna Pearson. It stars Neshla Kaplan, Ross Mann and Samuel Pashby, and it's directed by Becky Hope Palmer, the amazing Becky Hope Palmer. I'm so glad to see her name on that credit. So I hope you'll get down there. It's on for the rest of the week up till Saturday, 1 p.m. every day, A Play, A Pie and A Pint at Oran Mór in Glasgow. So now it's time for my guest of the week. It's Brian Ferguson, and he's with me, and we are Putting It Together.
Got a permanent contract now, 14 hours, 10 teaching hours a week at City of Glasgow College.
Do you?
I do.
Right, how's that going?
I love it.
Do you?
I totally love it.
I used to do that and I really didn't like it. Some people, it's kind of like, I think it's a love-hate thing.
Yeah.
With FE.
Yeah.
I was like, I couldn't bear it.
Where were you?
Coatbridge.
Oh.
On and off for years, yeah.
That's amazing. So Jo Ronan has just started with us, and she started at Coatbridge and then went to UWS and then.
Right.
So we're very lucky to have her. No, I did it the opposite way round. So I never really did much teaching at all for the first 15 years out after leaving drama school.
Mm-hmm.
But always had I always knew that when I did too much acting.
Didn't overdose on the old acting.
Oh my God, man. That I would feel really, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right.
And I just would get so burnt out. And I always kind of knew, I don't know why it took me so long, I always had this little, you know, I did teach a term with Scottish Youth Theatre way, way back.
Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did do a term of teaching at Scottish Youth Theatre. I couldn't even tell you when it was, but I would have been in, it was a long time ago. It probably was about 15 years ago. And I felt really kind of, I knew that it was something that I would like to do, but I wasn't very good at it at that point. And then I didn't do it again. But I always had a sense that this is something that can recharge my batteries.
Right, okay.
And really, it really, really is that.
So it's for tactical almost.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, there's something about, I can't imagine not acting,
mm-hmm.
but I had to get smarter at just keeping myself keeping replenishing myself, I suppose, so that I had something to offer when I was actually doing it.
Yeah I suppose one of the things about when we see very young actors is sometimes they haven't had a life, and sometimes it seems hard for them to, there's not a lot to draw on.
Yeah.
So I suppose in a sense for us, if we go away and do other things and we have other experiences and we feel other things, and you've got something to bring.
Totally. Absolutely, yeah. And I love that kind of by talking about, well, by watching other people who are kind of, you know, going through that experience, who are, you know, on the whole 18, 19, but even if they're a little bit older, they're really at that point in FE where they're at the beginning of this journey that that they've chosen. I found that really exciting. I've worked with younger people and I get some enjoyment out of it, but there's something for me about working with people who are at that age where they have made a decision to follow this path, that the conversation I can have with them is just different, because I can say, now you've chosen this, so, because then I can ask them, then I can say, I want to see you work harder than that.
You can have an expectation. It's reasonable for you to have expectations.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I find myself, if I'm working with younger people than that, it's easy for me to communicate with the ones who definitely show that flair where they're probably going to make that choice. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I really struggle with the other ones who are like, eh, this is a laugh.
Yeah.
I'm like, you need to be professional.
Totally. Oh, and some of them are just like, I don't want to be here. My mum wants me to be here. And you're like, well, I don't know how to have that conversation. That must be crap for you.
Yeah. Because you want to say all those things like, look, if you don't want to be here, just get out.
Exactly.
But you can't say that.
Exactly.
You're a babysitter in some sense.
Exactly. You can't say, well, you chose to be here. No, I didn't. All right. Well,
I remember my first day in FE. I said, I had a group of students who were doing a thing called, what was I teaching? Performance, musical theatre repertoire, it was. So I was supposed to work with them on their songs and how they performed them and all the rest of it. But I thought, I'm going to have a proper kind of, not Goodwill Hunting, what am I thinking of? Dead Poets Society moment, where it's going to be pure inspirational. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all these big ideas and then you go in and it's like you're toppled off your perch pretty quickly. So I sat them down on the first day and I said, okay, we're going to start with a question. Why musical theatre? One of them said, because there were no places left on hairdressing. Well, do you know what I mean? It's like,
I totally, yeah.
Brings you back down to air.
Totally. Yes, 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 yes. I totally have those moments as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but I mean, I'm quite new to it still. So, you know, I started teaching on the HN courses there, HNC and HND they do, just last September. And so there's definitely moments like that. But then at the same time, you know, I just before summer did like a run working with the HNDs on their final production, and we did a little in-house production, and actually I chose a script that I love, which is Marco Rowe's script Terminus, which was on at the Trav just over 10 years ago, and it's fantastic, and it's three interweaving monologues, and there was 10 of them doing it. So I thought, right, I'm not going to spend my time blocking this. I'm not going to do any of that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to work with them, and I'm going to say, and basically, your job is to stand still and look us in the eye and tell us this story. So in a way, I did myself a favour in that, because I didn't have to worry about blocking and all of that. What I had to do was to get them to own that story. And actually, it was fantastic. And they'd had such a rough ride. Like, students have just had such a rough time over the last... Their course was unrecognisable to anyone else who had done that course beforehand. You know, they spent so much time at home. They spent so much time just waiting to hear what was happening. So I was really keen in that last term, like, let's give them a proper term. So we did that, and they were fantastic. They brought it, and it was hard for them, but they absolutely brought it. And then we also did a dip show where we filmed all the scenes, and we filmed them all outside, and we did it with film students, and it felt like they really got that end of year buzz.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hooked at the moment. I'm proper hooked.
It.
I really, really am, yeah. I'm loving the balance, though.
Yeah.
I'm loving that. So the college are really keen for me to be able to keep working professionally as an actor as well. So I think I would be loving it less if I wasn't able to do both.
Yeah, I think that doing that job full-time is a real... ask for anybody.
Yeah.
I think you know that when you meet the other people there who do it full time.
Completely.
You know, it's
completely.
A lot.
Completely. And, you know, such respect for that. Because I don't know how you keep energized for it, and, yeah. And to see this new cohort of students come in and to see them as complete, these are 20 individuals, like, yeah.
But it's in their interests, the students and the college, for you to keep working out with it.
I think
it?
So, yes.
For you to give richly something, to have something to give them.
Yeah.
What a treat they get if you keep working.
It's, no, it's at the moment it's going great, so yeah.
There we go. That's great. Well, I'm glad you're having a better experience than I did.
Oh, yeah.
It's not for everybody. That's all right.
Yeah.
But I think as we get older, like, I'm talking about your age, but as we progress in this business, what's happening, especially during this pandemic time, is that people are starting to find what is it that they do when they're not doing, when they're not acting or doing their thing, right? And it, rather than it being something that they hate, that they have to do.
Yeah.
Can it be another passion or something else that interests us?
Totally.
That feeds us, and that's what you're talking about.
Totally. I just did a development, a few days rehearsed reading, which
you saw
yourself, and I was having a conversation with that about some of the people that were doing that, and they were saying exactly the same thing. I think, like, I can't speak for everyone, but certainly for myself, I was really lucky that I'd started teaching before COVID hit anyway, so I was really lucky in that that was there. But actually, by and large, generally anyone I've spoken to that does what we do, that is freelance in this industry, like, most of them have been like, oh, I've been really lucky because I've had this, or I've managed to pursue this, or I'm doing this. And actually, it's not until something like that happens that I certainly thought, and my wife is kind of, you know, in theatre as well, and both of us were like, but this is what we do. Like,
anyway.
We never know what's happening next, you know.
We're built for this.
Exactly.
The uncertainty, the interruption of pay, figure something out.
Totally, we figure it out.
That's what we've all done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to say a majority of us. And then some people left. Some people left the industry. Left.
Yeah, of course.
And well, that was their choice to, you know.
But where are we at? We're still, we've still not landed, have we? I don't feel like we've landed anywhere.
We're not done
like,
yet, no. Although it's good that we're able to be back doing stuff. Some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
The scary thing to me is that, the COVID numbers are just as bad at the moment. In terms of cases, I mean, they're really high.
Aren't they worse?
Yeah, okay. But we're back. I don't know. I'm not sure how to get my head around it, because I don't want to not be back.
No.
Selfishly. But I suppose it's about vaccine, isn't it?
That's what we're doing, yeah. That's how we've
agreed that we're proceeding, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I feel like maybe this is a bit Andrew Marr for what I'm going for. What do you think of the vaccine? I'm still getting all that.
Yeah. No, I don't think... Who knows? I don't know. I mean, I guess what they're saying makes sense, that if hospital numbers stay low and if they manage to keep that link broken to, you know, a large extent between how many people are getting it and how many people are actually ending up in intensive care or dying, then
that's good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a wee bit about wee Brian Ferguson. Because I only know this Brian Ferguson, who I've known for maybe 8 years or so, a wee bit, a tiny bit. I've seen you work, you know, and we can talk about that in a bit. What was the wee guy like? You've fond memories of him.
Well, it depends where you go back to, I suppose. So, wee Brian Ferguson until 7, 8 years old was happy as Larry. So I was born in Pollock Shields, and I went to Pollock Shields Primary and loved it. I was one of only two white kids in the class.
Wow.
And it was fantastic, and the teachers were fantastic, and what I remember from there was these days where everyone would bring in like some kind of dish or food that they loved eating in their house, and so we would all bring these in. So my experience of that primary school was fantastic. You know, it was standing, hearing about proper different life experience and eating these amazing foods from all over the world.
Wow.
And it was such an inclusive kind of atmosphere in the school. And then when I was halfway through primary three, we moved, as you do, and we moved from Pollockshields to Crawfoot, another part of the south side of Glasgow. But I mean, the difference just could not have been more stark between the primary schools. I mean, Crawfoot was fine as a primary school. It was much more, it was, I guess, a typical inner city primary school. It was quite big. There were 700-800 kids there. But it was really hard. The move was really hard. And and it was hard for me. And I just got picked on like kids do. And I suppose that my experience of school had been that you were able to be, you know, you were able to show your,
be yourself
to our side. Yeah, right. You were able to, and that just wasn't really an option. And I had red hair and I had a big nose. And I mean, it was fairly, you know, it was just that. But that's no fun for someone that age. So that was, I mean, I didn't get it as bad as a lot of kids got it, but for someone at that age, it felt pretty rough.
It's enough, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So then I didn't like school. And then I suppose, and school was never fun really after that until I got to, so, I mean, it's all that a fucking, can we,
it's a fucking
cliche, but by the time I got to, you know, I found Scottish Youth Theatre when I was 10, and that was just, I had no interest in drama. I'd never had an interest, but my mum took me along and I did a class and literally went in not knowing the slightest thing about it and came out after 2 hours and was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So that was kind of...
Did your mum just pick it out there, though, as something for you to do? Or?
I have this idea in my head that my mum was like, I just need somewhere to put them.
Like we were talking about, you know, the babysitter.
Exactly. My mum would probably say, that's not true. Anyway, I don't actually know. But anyway, it was a good call by her. And that just became the place where, you know, I could be myself.
Yep. Yep. It's been said many times on this around this very table.
Yeah, you know?
And a lot of people specifically saying SYT as well.
Oh, that's, I mean, so
I'm sure you know there are people around then that are still about now working.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean SYT at the time was there was so many kids going there, and it really was in a way that it is not at all now. And you know, I think in many ways that's a good thing, but it really was the national youth theatre in a way. Although. Yeah. I say that, and my wife always has this. Her experience of SYT, although she never went, but from a distance, was that it was very elitist, and that you had to have money to go there, and you had to have, you know. And I think I was just very lucky in that my parents were able to kind of send me there and all of that. Mm-hmm. But so I mean, that was what happened. So. As a kid, I had a few years where I didn't have Scottish Youth Theatre, and then found that, and then kind of was already. So I guess I was already on, I had my eye on getting out of school by the time I was in second or third year. I was like, it's all right, there's light at the end of the tunnel here, I just need to.
Yeah, that's my experience of kind of like, I just need to ride this out.
Yeah.
I hate it. I don't believe any of it's going to be any use to me. I kind of had that sense.
Yeah. And just get what I need to get.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then get out.
Yeah. So when you said you came out of that first Scottish Youth Theatre class after 2 hours and said, this is what I'm going to do, how deeply do you mean that phrase? Do you mean like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, or this is my thing now?
Oh, no. My memory of it is that something just went, okay, cool, so this is what I'm going to do with my life.
Wow. That's huge.
That's how I remember it being. Yeah. That literally, that was it. It was like, cool, I've found my thing.
Right.
And then I've never questioned I've had points, like I'm sure anyone working in this industry does every so often, where you get burnt out and you're like, God almighty, is this it? Is it, can I keep going? Have I got anything left to give? Do I want to give anymore? And I've maybe once or twice like really gone, okay, what else could I do?
It's quite a short list for me. I mean, do you find that? Like, no, really much.
Yeah.
That's completely out with the arts.
Oh, no, I've never found anything that's completely out with.
No. Yeah. It's all connected in some way. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think all roads lead to the Kings or something?
Well, they all lead back. I mean, literally, I got to a point where I was like, right, I'm going to be a primary school teacher. Like, I was really like, I think I could just about do that. I mean, I couldn't, man. I would go off my head after a year and a half of doing just that.
Yeah.
But I was really, I went along and I was going to do, I was applying for unis to go and do the training. And I went along to Strathclyde and did the interview day and all that. And then I got offered a part and I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do that then.
Sack that. It's easy as that, isn't it?
Oh my God, yeah.
What did you get offered?
That was Serrano.
Right, okay. So right before Serrano, you were really...
Oh no, I was like, yeah, no, I was proper. But we just had our wee girl. Mm-hmm. And I knew that teaching, I was really like, no, teaching I love. So I knew that. And I really did just think, maybe I can make this work.
Mm. So when you were wee and Scottish youth teacher, you have this idea that you can do this for as a thing for your life or as a job. Then what did you think it was going to be like? And how does it compare to how it is?
Oh my God, I have no idea. I had no external idea of what it might look like. I just knew that feeling I had was the feeling that I wanted.
Okay, so you were being guided by that internal sense.
Always, Brian.
Right, okay. See, I would be the opposite then.
Right,
because
right,
I would
right.
see people like Nathan Lane
and
go, I want to be like that.
Uh-huh.
I bet he's got a cool life. Uh-huh. He does different parts and, you know, and he's a personality and he's funny. And to me, that's how I have always envisioned it.
That's still do. So interesting, is it? Yeah. And I suppose that's the thing with, it's so funny. So I'll have conversations with like certain people in my family who will be like, you know, I'll be talking about like teaching 3 to 5 year olds and getting really excited about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad or whatever will be like, I know, but you know, like, you'll be able to give all that up if you get offered, you know, and I'll be like, to me, it feels like the same thing. Like, I can't see that. I don't really see a difference between the two because the feeling for me is the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would be so different from that. Because I did a lot of the teaching I did was out of necessity early on when I first graduated. And I always kind of was getting through it and wished I didn't really have to do it. Which is not a good... I'm not proud of that. And I don't think I want people teaching who feel like that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I don't wish that on any student, really.
But you must have been good at it.
Well, that's the annoying thing. I did show a bit of a flair.
Aye.
It's like I could get away with it.
Huh.
Do you know what I mean? But I didn't really like doing it. And I'm glad I don't really have to do it that often now.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was saying to you that before I came in here, I listened to like a handful of the podcasts and it was funny how often I've heard you say that.
Really? Have I said it a lot?
Well,
done that
well,
many
you've
episodes.
Talked, no, but you've talked to people about teaching and they've said, and you've just ended up talking about teaching.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've definitely heard you say no, I don't love it. But that's good. At least you know, and at least, you know, you
couldn't even admit it back then. You know, I couldn't say that out loud because I was doing it so much.
Yeah.
And it's what I did.
Yeah.
It's good to get to the point and go, yeah, no, I didn't really like it. Mm-hmm. I do a short burst.
Yeah.
I like engaging with people and watching their progress and sort of giving them a hand with something for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm done with that.
Mm-hmm.
So you... Did you make the sort of direct transition from being at SYT as often as possible to going to drama school?
I did a year at Langside, yeah. I mean, my journey was fairly, like, run-of-the-mill. Not run-of-the-mill, but there's no real kind of interruptions in the journey. So I went school, finished fifth year, got as many hires as I needed for drama school.
Yeah, same, yeah.
Went to Langside for a year and then applied for... the Royal Scottish Academy, which is now RCS, and luckily got in there and went there and then graduated at a stupidly young age, like 20 or something, like not ready. Like
it's weird, isn't it?
Oof, God.
Out into the world, spat out.
Proper. I mean, yeah. And it's funny that you say, like, you know, like that difference between like the picturing it with, like, you know, up till then I'd been lucky enough just to go, well, I really like this feeling. I mean, and then graduating drama school and going,
the
I remember.
Privilege.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I mean, completely. And then, but I remember one day walking to Greg's at lunchtime for my cheese savoury and my sausage roll and working out in third year, working out how much money I would earn if I worked all year round in theatre. And this weight just fell into my stomach. Like, I was like,
oh my God,
that is not enough. Like,
it's not good.
It's not good. I mean, and then somehow managed to forget about that and
press
keep
on
going. But it, yeah.
You want to get used to the cheese savouries if you're going to be doing that wage.
Oh my God. Even then going, hold on a minute.
How did you know though? Had someone told you what a weekly?
Oh no, I think it was at that point where, yeah, it was third year and maybe I'd been offered my first gig. I was really low at the time as well. Like, you know that time when you're graduating drama school and you're meant to be, I suppose, I don't know if you're meant to be, but it feels like you're meant to be like ready to take on the world. And all I wanted to do was like hide in my bed for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It was just brutal. And do you know, a little bit like you were saying with the teaching, like for me, that first year out of drama school, like I was kind of working. I was working. I was really, you know, to a lot of people looking on, they'd have been like, well, he's just doing one job after another. And I was, but I was really depressed. I mean, I was really not feeling it at all.
Was that to do with that weight in the stomach and the realisation of what actually you were getting into?
Oh, God. I actually don't really know what it was. I think, actually, do you know what? I do know what it was now. It was related to, I was so young, right? Like a lot of people that go through drama school. And I mean, the depression kicked in like before, mostly through third year I had it.
Mm-hmm.
And then for that, like a good year after finishing as well. It was to do with not feeling like I actually had any agency over my own life.
Yeah.
You want to get signed by an agent, go in, and then they will get you work and you will go where the work is. Was so I can't think of the word, but I really struggled with that.
Yeah. I suppose that's linked to your realization about the pay. It's a kind of a, oh wait a minute, that's what this life is. God. That's what I'm getting into.
That was exactly the thought of that money. That was exactly, and I remember at the time it was between 13 and 14 grand a year was what I would get on equity minimum.
Yeah.
And feeling like, what I get, that's the money I get. I've come up against this throughout my life, but actually less so in the last few years, but like, what do I get out of this? Genuinely feeling that. Like, I was really low at the time, right? But, yeah, feeling like, wait a minute. What, is this all written? Like, what do I...
Yeah. Because really what that amount of money does is keep you in a modest life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Pay your council tax if you're lucky. Rent. There's probably not much left over.
No, there's nothing left over.
So as you say, it's like, what do I get? Because all that does is come in and basically go out for you to live in just a very
exactly
plain sort of a way.
But it's funny because I had no idea. I never had any notion that I might work in TV and film. Because a lot of people coming out of drama school would go, well, I'll work in TV and film.
Yeah.
But for me, it was just, no, it would be theatre all year. So anyway, I can't remember why.
I mean, that thought actually is quite ambitious in itself to think to be paid in a theatre 52 weeks a year, I mean, there's probably not, yes. there's very few actors that are actually doing that even.
Absolutely.
Even and getting their 13 grand.
Completely. And I think I thought, oh God, so is that what I'm like really aiming for? Would that be
fish.
Success? Because...
yeah, that's brutal.
God, that is brutal.
But we don't, I think at that age and level of experience, we don't realise how much of a portfolio, if you'll pardon the kind of business term, that we have to make as a career, really.
Yeah.
It's more realistic to think of ourselves as maybe doing that some of the time.
Aye.
The teaching, yeah. whatever other strings to the bow
yeah.
you get out there.
And also that there is space in, within that too. I had, like, it was hard for me to, and this says more about, you know, this is that privilege thing as well, probably. And, well, privileged in a way, and I'd never, like, there's no thought in there of like, wait a minute, I have the power to actually change my own experience here.
It was, as you say, written almost.
Exactly, and that yeah. was what the kind of depression came from, was like, I'm not even choosing this. Like, other people, are, you know, and that, yeah, so that was a different, that was what that was kind of about.
And what were those first few jobs in that year?
I mean, I had an amazing year for, like, in so I left and my first job out of drama school was Observe the Sons of Ulster, Marching Towards the Somme, and it was Giles Havergal's last show at the Sitz.
Oh, wow.
And then I went up to Perth and they overlapped and I did She Stoops to Conquer up in Perth, and that was, the people were fantastic, but the actual kind of work was, I suppose, less... felt less good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came and did a play called Love Freaks at the Tron, which was written by Ian Heggie and directed by Graham Eatoff. And but I mean, just working in the theatre, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then I think I did a Taggart in there. It was a busy first year.
Not bad, yeah.
No, but yeah, but yeah, I wasn't really present in it.
And were you thinking of ways out or other ways of doing things?
I was getting stoned.
Ah, that's another way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I was getting very stoned.
Yes.
Every day.
And did that? How did that mingle with the work? Did you find a way of making that work, or was it troublesome?
No, it was bad. It was terrible. I mean, I was getting stoned and I was taking antidepressants. So it was not... it was not good. And do you know, like, for a while the two worked hand in hand, and I was kind of just like, wow, look at me getting offered all this work and being really unhappy and being really stoned. And and then what happened was the work started drying up, and then I had like a year and a half where I was working in little cafes, coffee shops.
With the antidepressants and the weeds.
With the antidepressants, smoking weed on my coffee breaks.
Oh boy.
I remember at one point I was like, so that's what I did. Because the work dried up, because it must have ended up showing somehow. It just must have. And it was, for a while, it was kind of fine. It was probably what I needed in a weird way, was just like, no pressure, work in this coffee shop. Did that for a while, and then luckily realised that I had to deal with stuff. Realised, you know, I got this quiet voice that was just like, okay, and now you have to stop this. And there was lots of things I had to change, and started changing them, and then started working again, but was working much more on a, oh wait, I'm choosing this now.
Okay.
I choose this. And then it became completely different.
So there was a turning point relatively early on in your career then, from that realisation that you had at the end of drama school.
Yeah. Oh God. When I was 24, maybe. Mm. I mean, I was, yeah. And just started, was very, very lucky, because I worked in, up north, in Dundee with a company and with some people who, like, I met the right people at the right time. I'd stopped smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I was journaling like a fiend. Like, I discovered notebooks. Like, where have you, like, I didn't know I needed to write, and then suddenly I was like literally like spewing out all this stuff. And then I went up to Dundee, and so it all just became, I got out of Glasgow, I wasn't smoking weed, I was writing a lot, and then I started making work with someone who became, like, for a long time, a really close friend, and also a very important, like, director that I would work with. And worked up there. And that was at the time when National Theatre of Scotland was starting in Scotland. So mm-hmm. John Tiffany and Vicky Featherstone came to see the work. The work was good. And then National Theatre of Scotland started up. And I just hit at the right time. And then they were like, come and work with us.
You did an associate scheme with them? How did that work? It was a year of sort of mentorship or something?
So that again though was at the end of another burn. So then I had this period of really feeling creative and working as an actor mm-hmm. that lasted 18 months, 2 years. Generally I find that they go about 18 months and then I'm like done. And so I was looking around for something else. I was like, I'm spent. Like mm-hmm. I cannot do another play. I have nothing else to give. And Simon Sharkey from NTS. It was just after, it was like the end of the, like a few months after Blackwatch, or a year after Blackwatch.
Which you had done.
Yeah, yeah.
You were in the original company of Blackwatch.
Yeah. And while I was doing Blackwatch and all that, I felt really creative and I was really enjoying acting. But yeah, it was about a year after that. And I was doing a show at the Trav and I was going to finish that. And then I was like, I'm done, man. And it's that thing as well of we're just saying about the money. And I mean, I know that we all get this and so many people listening go of totally understand that experience of like, you just give it everything and you're like, and then I'm going to need to find a job like a week after this is done.
Yeah, and you're riding high as well. You could be, you're in Toronto giving it big licks. Yeah. It's a big moment of your life. Yeah. And then you're like, oh shit, I need to figure out what I'm doing next week.
Aye. But I didn't even go on the round the world stuff with Blackwatch.
So. Not even that good.
No, so I did the Edinburgh run and then I did the Scottish tour and right. then I was kind of done with it. I was like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. So I also had that going on, people going, you said no to Blackwatch going to America, didn't you? And I'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, why? Mm. So that was a weird time as well because I was trying to make my peace with the fact that I had said no to this thing because I really felt done with the work. But that then, actually, as they were off doing New York, LA, and all of that, I was, and this is no disrespect to the Tron or any, but I was doing a gig at the Arches or at the Tron and mm-hmm. and really trying to figure out, I suppose, why I had made that decision. And then, but not really knowing. And then the NTS, and then Simon Sharkey was like, we've got one of these associate places left. And I was like, yes, direct, and I want to try direct, and I want to try teaching, I want to do.
Right, so that was the idea of it, was that you were going to...
Always.
It was with learning.
I was like, yes, that's what I need. That's what I need. Yeah, and then I got sick, like really sick. During that, God, this is probably a really, God, it's weird doing these podcasts. It's weird doing this.
You're telling me.
All I can do is talk and be like, God, I've got no idea if this is a, this might be like the most boring crap.
I'm interested. That's why I'm still talking to you.
Okay. I've only got your word to go by here.
So,
I got sick. I got proper sick. I got ME. I got knocked really hard.
Wow.
Yeah. So I did like the first 3 months, and this is all connected. So those 2 years of depression at the end of drama school, and it kind of crept in before that, but it took the so when I was at NTS, I got laid proper low by Emmy. Mm-hmm. And then was out the game for like 3 months.
Wow.
Like properly out the game, and then was recuperating for like a good another 3 months after that, just learning how to be well. Mm-hmm.
And was the mental health affected by that too, presumably.
It was huge. I mean, for me, it's funny, there's a lot about Black Watch for me as a show, and so kind of when I did Black Watch, I was, like I say, creatively, like, I felt really alive and I was really enjoying acting at the time. But, and then Black Watch was such a massive hit of a show that this weird thing happened where it became this product, and then it was going around the world, and then it became this different thing of, like, I suppose I was the narrator in Black Watch, so I was quite a central figure in the show. And, but then it became this, oh wow, Black Watch is touring and you're going to go off and do these things. And then I felt completely disconnected from the whole experience. I was like, no, I'm done. And again, it came back to that thing of, who am I doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
Which has been an ongoing thing.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
me, and the ME was very, very connected to that.
So your body almost had a reaction to
my body, and then
it
I
said stop.
Yeah, so then basically I found myself back inside the walls of the National Theatre of Scotland.
But it doesn't have walls, Brian.
No, it did. The Civic House was what the walls were called. So I found myself sharing a building with people who. So when I said no to Black Watch a year before, that was kind of like a thing for me, but also maybe for some people working in that company who were like, well, you know, and I'm sure people had very different reactions. Some people didn't care. Like, but
some people, you're the guy who, yeah, who didn't want to do Black Watch anymore.
Yeah, of
and
course.
Why the hell would anyone not want? Yeah.
And so I suppose, however much of this I brought myself and was just in my own head, but it felt that it didn't all feel good to me being in that building.
Mm.
Because I hadn't made my peace with it, and also because there probably were some people who were like, are you off your head? Or and also some people I think did feel a bit miffed by it, who felt a bit like,
mm-hmm.
who do you think you are?
Really? Yeah.
A little bit. That mm-hmm. was the feeling I got.
Yeah.
And my body just stopped working, yeah.
It's amazing the power of the mind, really, I think. I'm not one of these people that would suggest that if something's brought on by mental health that it's not real, because it's every bit real, of course it is, and you experienced it. But the fact that the mind and your inner experience can so affect your physical health always amazes me. You know,
I mean,
very
completely,
true.
Yeah. And then I got well.
Mm.
And I mean, I have to say it was amazing being at NTS, because also I could be unwell and be lying on my couch for 3 months and I was getting paid. Like
no other job in our industry, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course.
But then I realised there was a link, and I realised that I was also, there's two kind of, this is a very general overview, but there's two kind of types of people by and large that tend to get ME.
Mm.
And one are people who are like carers, so who put other people's needs before their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, which I think I was, which is people who are very, very driven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, and there'll be people that disagree with me on this, but for me, this was true, that essentially it comes out of a place of when you lose. When you stop listening to your body, really, you know,
right,
and that had definitely happened with me, and that had been a recurring thing.
Sure.
And then I got better, and then there was kind of a good few years I had ME on and off for like 10 years. So really, right. I was better, but then we moved to London, and over the course of 4 years in London, like, the work was going well, but I was able to give less and less and was getting more and more ill.
It's horrible.
It was, yeah, it was rough. And by the time, at the end of those 4 years down in London, I was really like, I don't know what to do here. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel, it felt out of my control in a way that it hadn't before. Mm-hmm. The ME had quite quickly, during the first bout, I was very lucky to come across, and just for me, this is very useful if anybody's listening, a thing called Mickle therapy, which for me was like a complete lifesaver and a way of looking at ME and thinking about ME that made total sense to me.
Brilliant.
And I was very lucky to be put onto that. There's another thing, reverse therapy, which does a very, very similar thing. And for me, they were fantastic. But by the time we were down in London for those 4 years, even they had stopped making so much sense to me, because I couldn't get better. But I couldn't get better because we were in London, really.
That'll do it.
I could not get well in London. I could not gather my energy. I had no time or space to like gather enough energy to start recovering.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until we moved back up here. And that's part of the teaching as well. I knew that I needed to. So one of the things that Mickle therapy and reverse therapy, one of the kind of things that they really talk about to get better is to do, don't have a short attention span. So just do something until you feel tired of it, and then switch what you're doing.
Okay.
So in the early recovery days, that's very much like literally like 20 minutes of TV and then have a nap for half an hour, mm-hmm. and then go for a walk for 10 minutes and then have a nap.
So you don't push past any walls, really. You go, right, that's it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Sounds healthy in general.
Exactly. But that, and it really helped me. Mm-hmm. But it's not what I had done before. So what I'd always done before was focusing on one thing, mm-hmm. hard,
yeah.
for a long time.
Yeah. Which is arguably how you got sick.
It's completely how I got sick. And what I started doing after I was well enough to to do it on in a larger way, that's totally what the teaching is and totally what is about doing that in my life.
Yeah, in all aspects.
Completely.
But it sounds like, to talk about specifically about work again in relation to that, it sounds like from quite early on you had the confidence to follow an instinct that you have about to turn a big job down. So that was obviously, as you've said, people had strange reactions to it. You even questioned yourself afterwards. So is that something that's still with you? And do you think it's unusual in people in our business, particularly in Scotland? I would argue that might be quite an unusual trait. Mm-hmm. Do you still have it?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So you're quite selective?
I'm selective. And I guess it comes back to that thing of that first drama class. And I kind of go by the feeling that a thing gives me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to get too, because I know that I get sick as well if I go, oh no, but maybe I shouldn't say no to that, because if I say no, oh no, hold on.
Yeah.
As soon as I like start doubting my instinct, or then that way madness lies, like, you know, mm-hmm. I've definitely gotten myself in a state about, oh God, what am I doing? I've said no and I should, you know. But actually, for me, if it's about how do I stay healthy, then it's by doing that.
So that's the health becomes the top priority, which of course, for all of us, it should be and needs to be. But we forget, don't we?
It's so easy to forget. We don't live in a world that wants to remind us of that, do we?
No, well, we live in a world where we cure or try to deal with sickness rather than prevent it. So what you're talking about is preventative, isn't it? Let's not get sick in the first place.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Yeah.
But you've already been there. Yeah, which gives definitely. You that. That's why you have, I suppose, that perspective. You know what it's like when you get sick.
Totally.
Yeah.
And also, I suppose that what I also knew was that once I stopped listening to my instinct and did things that I kind of didn't want to do, that I'm really quick to realise, because if I said yes to a show or a part, say if it was an acting gig or any gig or anything in my life that I kind of, that really quiet, strong feeling in me was saying no to, I would find myself doing it, but like all my will and imagination would not come with me.
Yeah, so you're there, but you're not really there.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you want to get out. I mean, I'm just thinking back because of what you've said to a few things that I probably should have said no to, because I remember how I felt when I was doing them.
Mm.
Maybe get away with it or get around it, but actually it's like the joy isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I needn't have done that, or I shouldn't have, but it's done now, isn't it?
Totally.
But I think it's a good thing for people to hear, especially, I always think about young actors listening to this, or new graduates, or people who are in drama school hearing this stuff, and I think, what would you take from that? What if I'd heard this back then, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard as well. It took me till I was 35 to really be like, okay, stop. And it took me to getting really, really sick. And having a daughter, I have to say, it was massive for me having, I don't know where I'd be had we not had our wee girl, because for me that was like, oh, it just put my shit into like the perspective. I kind of needed it to be put into. But it's tough if you're young, like, because I absolutely understand that thing of, well, there's work being offered, I should say yes to that work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I would say that if you're lucky enough to have that quiet voice, which you can hear every now and again, that goes, nope, we're done with this thing now, change direction, yeah, I would always say you have to listen to that voice.
That's a very good place to end. Sage advice from the one and only Brian Ferguson. Imagine, I mean, we didn't know where we were getting that today.
No.
I thought, come and have a wee chat, but we didn't know where we were getting the advice. It's great.
It's not even advice, man. It's just, you know, it's just what it is, isn't it?
It's truth. I tell you what, I've got a wee story for you. Some people have heard this story before, but I don't think you have. I came to see you in Hamlet at the Sitz.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting sitting in about the third row of the stalls next to a couple who, my guess is they weren't theatre goers, let's say.
Mm.
And he kept saying to her in a sort of normal speaking voice during the show, they were sort of transitional, the scenes weren't, you know, delineated quite as strongly as maybe traditionally would be, right?
Yeah.
Transitional moments, the lights are up, furniture's getting moved, whatever. And in those moments, he would say, aye, that was quite something. That type of thing. Oh, he's a bit of a joker, the fella with the beard, you know? That type of little comment. And she'd be going, oh, yeah. And after a couple of goes of this, I shushed him. I was a shusher in those days, and I've actually returned to shushing, but I was put off shushing for a long time after this particular night. I went, shh. And I did it eventually 3 times. But they got bigger and bigger because I was getting more and more annoyed. Shh. And at the interval, when his missus went to the bathroom and it was just me and him sitting in the row next to each other, he leaned into me and he went, come here. And I leaned in and he went, if you ever shush me again, I'll cut your fucking face off. And I said, right you are. And I sat back in my seat, absolutely terrified. He waited for me at the end of the show, trying to have a fight with me. He wanted to have a fight with me.
Oh, wow.
And I had to sit in the bar, just passing time until I was hopeful that he had completely left the area. I mean, he stood at the other side of the bar looking at me, and I was sitting at one of the tables. And he stood and tried to stare me out as if to say, let's go. And waited and waited. So I just thought I'd tell you that because you're kind of involved.
That's quite something.
Isn't it? Yeah. So for a long time, number of years after that, I never shushed. But I'm back.
You're back.
Oh, I'm back in a big way.
Oh God, I hope you don't meet him again.
I hope not. The other day I was at a show, an outdoor show at the Fringe, and I turned to 2 people beside me and I went, shh, listen.
Oh wow. See, there's that teacher.
Shh, Excuse me, how dare you? Yeah. Very bold. Yeah, I get them tilt, but I risk life and limb for that.
You do.
To keep the theatre quiet.
Yeah.
Someone's got it.
Someone's got it, mate.
Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Terrific stuff. Food for thought indeed. And that story is completely true at the end there. I used to tell it when I was doing a bit of stand-up, actually. The short time I spent doing a wee bit of stand-up, that was one of my stories. Anyway, thanks very much to Brian for coming along, having a wee chat with me. So good to do that in person, straight across the table from someone. What a joy. I've missed it so much, and I'm really glad that we're still doing episodes and that you're still listening. Because without you listening, I mean, there's really very little point. So from the caravan and from me, it's until next time, it's cheerio. And next week, I've got a brand new episode for you with a brand new guest that you've never heard before. Unless, of course, it turns out to be someone that you have heard before, but they're saying things that you haven't heard before. Either way, we'll be back next week at the usual time and place. And until then, take care of yourself. Get down to Oranmore, see the play, and enjoy life. Breathe in. Enjoy. Smile. Drink some water, wear your mask, you know the deal. Cheerio now.